Hey, so I'm going to speak now a little bit about this topic of karmic beauty. And about 15 minutes, then we'll take a period for walking or another short period of Q&A if you have some. There are many things that the Buddha talked about as being beautiful. He talked about being skilled in the beauty of samadhi. He talked about engaging in a beautiful series of practices that lead to liberation and freedom. He talked about a beautiful witnessing or observing of our experience, what's happening. He talked about the beauty of a person, not their physical beauty, but some inner beauty, how their mind is, how their integrity is. It's often associated with a person's sila, person's ethics, that they're beautiful. It turns out the Buddha talked a lot about beauty. However, if those of us who read the English translations of the Buddha's teachings, we often miss this because the word that's translated, often translated, the word that means beauty, and which is the first dictionary definition in all kinds of Indic language dictionaries, English, Sanskrit English, Pali English, beauty and beautiful is the first definition. That word is commonly translated in the sutta into English as good. Now, I don't have an argument with good. Good is good. But good is a bit flat compared to beauty, beautiful. And in my reading of the suttas, I know a little bit of Pali, is that there's a tendency in English translations to make them flat. And we tend to lose some of the richness and the vividness and the inspiration of the ideas and the words, the aliveness of some of these concepts that the Buddha talked about that make it feel, in some ways, maybe much more personal and evocative and inspiring. So the word that's this word that's often translated as good, so some of you will know what this word because it's kalyana. And we have in our scene, and it's often said, people speak it in English, Kalyanamitta, which is translated as a good spiritual friend. And so here, Kalyana, the word Kalyana is translated by two English words, good spiritual, spiritually good friend. And if you just reverse those two words from good spiritual friend to spiritually good friend, then you capture more the feeling of this word kalyana, where it's an adjective for the good and not the adjective for the friend, so spiritually good. And but the first dictionary definition is beautiful. And there's something about beauty which speaks, I think, to our sensibilities, our aesthetic mind. It's something that we can relate to very differently than to doctrine or to abstract ideas or to even words like concentration, which I think half the time that people try to concentrate, it's not done in a very beautiful way. There's striving, there's pushing, there's expectations, there's all kinds of things that go on in that in the mind. And also beautiful, and I don't know how it is for you, what it evokes for you, but it's hard for me, it's hard to imagine appropriating for the self, for the ego, the beauty in the mind. It's kind of, is it really personal? Is it, really me? Or is it something that's a little more impersonal, or something more and certainly I think that the fascinating idea that as soon as you cling to beauty, you lost the beauty. It's like if you like having an open hand so much that you want to hold on to it and make a fist, you lost the open hand. I think clinging to beauty is that way. It's kind of like as soon as you have a beautiful mind and you grasp onto it, it's gone. It's vanished. So that if to associate meditation practice with beauty, rather than associating with concentration or non-distractibility or I don't know what other kind of ideas that we get caught in that lend itself to some kind of striving or pushing or maybe even some kind of judgment. Certainly you can judge your mind for not being beautiful enough, but maybe, just maybe, if you realize how important beauty is, you'll appreciate that criticizing your mind for not being beautiful enough is not a beautiful thing to do. Now, I know our minds are so difficult, and we get tie ourselves up in knots around this, and just, you know, no way out of the self-criticism, no way out of, you know, seeing yourself as being wrong and doing it wrong. And sometimes you need to somehow have a, you know, just leap out of the mind and kind of take a leap of faith and see if you can find a whole different way of relating. No matter how difficult your mind is, how ugly it is, if we use that contrast with beauty, what's being talked about here is not the innate characteristic of your mind. In fact, in this early Buddhism, there's a real hesitation, strong hesitation or insistence to not see anything about oneself as being innate. So there's nothing innate. But rather than considering the, you know, beauty as something innate, beauty exists in the activity of the mind, the actions of the mind. And to some degree, we have choice in our activities. If you go to walk in town today, later on, you have some choice about whether you walk fast or slow. I mean, that's, you know, you can decide what to do, how to walk. You have choice. We have a lot of choice that we act on. And that's why the beauty associated with a karma, which means actions, karmic beauty, the beauty of our activities. So to the degree to which you have some choice over the actions of your mind, can you do those actions beautifully? There might be many ways in which you do not have choice. If you have no choice, in a kind of way, it's okay. Kind of way, you're not responsible. Something else is. But you do have responsibility over those areas where you have choice. And to practice mindfulness is to engage that choice. To sit down to meditate is a choice. To stop being involved in the stream of thoughts that take you everywhere in the world, to being present here for this difficult mind, that's a choice. As this practice grows and grows and grows, slowly, we are increasing the range, increasing the domain of where we have choice in our minds, in our hearts. We're expanding that place of choice until it becomes clear how much freedom we can live with. We have a lot of, we can develop a lot of freedom. And part of awakening, becoming awake or spiritually mature in this tradition, is to have become, have maximal amount of choice, and to be able to engage that choice in a way that feels free, feels transcendent, feels beautiful, feels almost like you're not making the choice anymore. The choice is being made for you. But it's not like the no choice you had in the beginning, which you were caught and trapped and narrowed. Now there's a more feeling of, now wisdom is choosing. Now something beautiful is choosing. So to the degree to which we have choice, that's where we can begin orienting ourselves to beauty. And I'd like to propose to you that having that as a reference point might be a fascinating alternative to the usual reference point that most of us might have about being right, being good. And this idea of being good, people get trying to be good and prove ourselves to other people. Be the good boy, be the good girl, be the good student, be the good this. You know, it's pretty oppressive for some of us to have that kind of as a reference point. To be the one who makes no mistakes, to be the one who has all the answers, to be the one who, you know, just on and on the reference points. But might there be something inspiring and beautiful, inspiring, even freeing, calming, settling, to begin finding in the mind, what is the beautiful way to use this mind of yours? At first, people who do this will start feeling that it's insincere, it's not real, it's not who I really am. I'm supposed to be authentic. And maybe that's okay. But if you decide to walk down the sidewalk beautifully, is that inauthentic? Decide to dance beautifully, is that inauthentic? You know, it's a choice. It's a choosing beauty over rushing or walking in a kind of, I don't know, uninspired way. So to have beauty, to walk in beauty, to talk in beauty, to think in beauty. Imagine that. Some of you probably have a hard time imagining thinking beautifully. Possible to think in beautiful ways. It's not easy what I'm talking about, but if you don't know about the possibility for this, you would never try it. You would never orient yourself to this. Never appreciate when there is beauty in the mind. If you know that it's possible, then you might notice that when it does happen, and you might take the little small steps to begin moving in that direction. Not held back, without being held back by the belief that you and your mind is the opposite of beautiful. I can't do it. That's not who I am. It's just small, small little steps. Beauty. Maybe it's how you come back from wandering off in thought and meditation. Come back in a way that has elegance, like a dance, like you're a dancer in the mind. And you kind of just, you don't come directly back. You kind of make a big arc in the mind and kind of just come in for a landing and just land back on the breath. And that's beautiful. The and so finally, what I want to say about this karmic beauty, we have in these English translations of the Buddha's teachings, the idea that there's good and bad karma. Now, I'm sure that good karma is good karma. Bad karma, I guess, is bad karma. It turns out that some of the places, a good number of the places where the Buddha makes this distinction between so-called good and so-called bad, the word for good is kalyana. He's making a distinction between beautiful karma and bad karma. And suddenly, this good and bad karma has almost an ethical feel to it, maybe even puritanical for some people's minds. And but when you suddenly, when you introduce the idea of the contrast is between beautiful karma and bad karma, there's a very different feeling. It's not quite as ethical. Though for the Buddha, someone who's ethical is beautiful. Not just with the word kalyana, but there's other words for beauty that they're also used for someone who is ethical. That so this idea of being ethical is beautiful. And maybe for other people it's beautiful, but hopefully it's beautiful for you. Imagine you look inside yourself and you see beauty. It's possible for each of you, absolutely. But it involves this radical thing, very radical, very difficult. And that is, find where you have some choice and exercise that choice in a beautiful way. And let that grow and develop. And a good place to begin is in your meditation practice. You'll get the hang of it. And for those of you who don't relate to or can't find any pleasure, dharmic pleasure in your meditation, I'd like to propose that you will, instead you'll find something else that's even more precious. And that is, you'll find karmic beauty, because you're engaging in what you have choice over and making it beautiful. And I'm sure there's a lot more to say about it, but it's mostly a matter of you experimenting, exploring, understanding what beauty means for you, what inspires you, and seeing what does it take here, what shift, what change, what different orientation, what different pacing, what different way of engaging. And one way that I would, if you really have struggling to understand what I mean in terms of the mind and meditation, one thing you might experiment with is where you have a choice. When you do whatever you do in your mind, do it slowly. If you do it slowly, you're more likely, I think, to discover how it can be done beautifully. Slowly, easefully. Do it easefully. Do things with ease. So, those are my thoughts. And now we have another half an hour. Now it's 25 minutes for easeful walking meditation, or easeful 5-minute break. And then those of you who'd like to come back and be part of a little Q&A session, we'll do it for 15, 20 minutes or so, maybe 15 minutes this time. So there's a break afterwards too. So we'll start again here 10 after or so, 5 minutes for those of you who want the Q&A.